Things to Remember Not to Forget by Catherine Center. At our house, for our kids who are 2 and 5, everything is better with a big side order of naked. Jumping on the bed is good, but naked jumping is better. Hiding in the closet is good, but naked hiding is better. Every good thing is better as a naked thing. Naked hide and seek, naked running in circles, naked toothbrushing, naked breakfast, naked zoo animals. The only thing, in fact, that's not better naked is bathing, which is far better done with socks on. Still, bath time accepted, as often as they can remember to, my kids strip down and enjoy the particular tickle of delight you can only get from being just plain nude. I don't know where they get it from. But I do know I should be recording it on video, just like I should be recording birthday parties and trips to amusement parks and all our official moments of happiness and even, on occasion, our moments of sadness, just to keep things real. Though I will confess that when my daughter Anna was a baby, just as she was learning to roll over, I videotaped her rolling across our living room over and over until, as she got close to me with the camera and lifted her head way up to smile, she lost her balance and clonked over, smacking her head on the hardwood floor. The camera hit the sofa, and then there was only the floral pattern out of focus, my muffled voice shouting, "Holy shit, oh holy shit," and the baby crying an endless, unsoothable river. That moment, I recorded back over. Now in the video, she rolls and rolls and rolls, with never a hint of the injury to come. Just at the precipice of disaster, we cut to a new scene of Anna in the baby Bjorn, strapped safely to her daddy, who is hopping around and singing a little rhyming rap ditty about her toes and her nose and a red, red rose. Whenever I go back to watch that section of our early recordings of Anna's baby life, I squint with dread as she rolls. And then, when it cuts, I relax. Crisis averted. She's safe with Daddy, as if it never happened, as if the video is somehow truer than the moment itself. There is so much I should be recording, especially the things I will never remember. Anna inking her entire body with a green stamp pad, her brother Thomas wearing his sister's Tinkerbell costume along with a tool belt holster and announcing he's Bob the Builder. All the little moments that break like waves over the surface of our lives and then disappear. But I'm not recording nearly as much as I should. Even though I know that one day these nutty little people whose inquiries about ladybugs and lowly worm populate almost every minute of my waking life will be gone. Not gone exactly, of course. Still here, still my children, but grown up. Someday the objects of their little selves will be replaced, and I know it as well as every parent knows it. And so, the video recorder, the digital camera, the albums, the baby journals, the storage tubs full of outgrown PJs and macaroni-encrusted artworks. What else can you do but hang on to anything you can? But I forget things so easily, like charging the camcorder batteries, and I've never been great at planning ahead. And anyway, another part of me says there's some tension between recording a moment and actually living that moment. Some part of me says it's better to see everything firsthand with my actual eyes than through the flip-out screen of the camcorder. I forgot, for instance, to charge the battery before my daughter's 3rd birthday, possibly one of the best days of my entire life. We had a butterfly party in my mom's backyard on the cheeriest spring day a birthday-throwing mama could possibly wish for. The air was cool, but the sun was warm. The grass was bright green, and we had a machine releasing hundreds and hundreds of bubbles from a balcony above the yard. A friend painted all the children's faces like butterflies, bodies on the noses, brilliant red and blue wings on the cheeks, and tall, curly antennas on the foreheads. That day is still absolutely vivid for me, and I can't help but wonder if it would have been the same if I'd been messing with a video camera or panning the faces in the crowd instead of just drinking them in. Maybe it's best to just be there, to live it and to let it go. I go back and forth. There are, of course, so many moments that you spend with your children. It's not like missing a few of them will suddenly mean missing the whole thing. Parenting, as I'm more and more aware every day, is a long haul kind of thing. So long haul, in fact, that your eyes and even your mind can glaze over. It's so easy to check your email compulsively or flip through a magazine. How is it possible that I ever, even for 1 minute, felt more interested in reading a celebrity magazine than watching my kids make a stew in our igloo cooler out of grass clippings and a whole bag of cat food. It is not possible. It just can't be. My own mother had a Super 8 camera that she carried around in her big purse when we were little. For Christmas, a couple of years ago, my parents put those movies on DVD for my sisters and me, and for many months afterwards, my kids and I watched them every single day. At first, I was tickled to see us all again, at the beach, our chubby legs stomping the sand, or riding the monorail at Disney World, our hair fluttering, or hunting Easter eggs in our old backyard. I'd point at the screen and try and explain everything to my little ones. That's baby Mama, and that's baby Aunt Lala, and that's young Nana. They loved to hear about it, but those people didn't mean anything to them. Who is that again? Which one is she? Where's the real Nana? After a while, it started to make me sad to watch the movies. I found myself calling my mother every time we turned them on. They're making me watch the movies again, I'd say. And then I'd ask her any question. What are you eating? How did you sleep? Where are you headed? Just to get her talking. Just to remind myself that even though the young Nana was gone, the real Nana was just across town. Even if my kid-chasing, booty-wiping life didn't really allow me to talk with her the way I used to, she was there still, anyway. I never imagined how all-encompassing having children would be before I did it. In my mind, if I'm really honest, I guess I imagined that my mother was going to raise my kids somehow. She knew all about it, after all. She was the mom. I'd never even changed a diaper. I imagined that having children would be a kind of return to my own childhood, when in fact, of course, it has only taken me farther away. That's what just hit me, how you really can't have everything. You have to give up the old to get the new. You can't be the child and the mom at the same time. You can't be your young self and your old self at the same time. You can't know what you know now and feel the way you did then. You can't, you can't, you can't. But I still find myself keeping an eye out for things that are already gone, as if they might reappear somehow, as if my young mom, the mother I knew when I was growing up, the person who's my definition of what a mother is, might pick us all up one afternoon in her Suburban and take us to my childhood home for spaghetti dinner. If my mother were watching me right now, she would argue the pointlessness of even thinking about it. There is no point in longing to be back in that house. It doesn't exist anymore, and neither do those people, not in the same way. I can't be there, so I might as well have somewhere else to be. And so I do, of course I do. I don't mean to say that one house is better than another, just that some funny part of me keeps expecting my red-headed mother from 1977 to show up and take over, because I certainly don't know what I'm doing. Maybe she didn't either. Now that I'm the age she was then, I wonder about that a lot. But she must have. She's still 1,000 times better at the mechanics of life than I am. She can always find the sock I can't find, or get out the stain I can't remove, or solve the algebra problem that I've messed up 3 different times in 3 different ways. And despite everything I know now, I still believe, as I did when I was little, that there is an entire universe of things that she knows that I don't. I still believe that nothing truly bad can ever happen if my mother is around. I know it's not true, but still, it is true. Here's the thing, I don't believe in myself in that same way. Last Christmas, my kids got the flu. The influenza flu, and after our lengthy quarantine was over, I took them to the mall, to a bookstore, to celebrate. I'm not very brave about taking my kids to crowded public places, especially since Thomas is not only the king of running away from parents and the king of running into traffic, but also the king of getting lost. For our mall excursion, I strapped him into the stroller and then listened to him fuss and writhe and beg to get out for the next 20 minutes. When we finally hit the bookstore, I unsnapped him, and he took off running, since he is also the king of pulling books off shelves, just as my daughter announced that she needed to pee like crazy. I don't think I'd ever let her go to the bathroom on her own like that, but I was triaging at that point, and her brother was heading for the stacks. I let her go, which she did with confidence, as I ran to get her brother, and then, just as I grabbed him by the arm, I heard a scream. In public places, all screaming children sound to your ears like your own child. But when I turned toward the sound, this screaming child, this time, was in fact my own, with her pinky caught in the hinge of the massive, self-closing bathroom door. I ran over and pushed the door open, remembering to be cool, knowing that I could not, under any circumstances, panic. "Okay," I said, pushing the door open. "It's okay." And that's when I saw that actually, it wasn't okay. Her fingernail on her pinky had come off. I mean, off in its entirety. It was just hanging by a piece of skin, flapping open like a shutter. Now, when I think back to that moment, I always think about my mother and how she handled it on the day I slipped on gravel in the street and came back with a knee that she describes as hamburger meat. She had to pick up the pieces of gravel with a pair of tweezers, and she was so woozy doing it, she says, that she called our next-door neighbor to come and stand beside her. I know how I should have handled that moment in the bookstore. I can imagine my better self calmly guiding us all with confidence from crisis to recovery. But my better self was not there that day, just my regular self, or, more truthfully, my insanely freaked out, flapping like a chicken self. Because once I pieced together that our car was parked 5 floors up in a garage packed with post-holiday traffic, and that I had no Band-Aids and no Neosporin, and that I, nobody but me, was going to have to decide what to do next, I lost my cool. Should I pull the nail completely off? Should I try to stick it back on? Should I rinse the meat of that finger under the faucet in a bathroom that was easily a petri dish for flesh-eating bacteria? I didn't have the answers, and I didn't know how to get them, and yep, I lost it in a big, bad way. My 9-fingernailed daughter was calmer than I was. She sat, crying and shaking, on the side of a sofa while the bookstore staff went off to look for a first aid kit. But I was so hysterical that one spectator even leaned in and said, "Your panic will make it worse for your daughter." To which I responded, right in earshot, "She lost her bleeping fingernail," as if this injury were so off the charts horrible that all parenting bets were off. This would not have been a camcorder moment for me. On the drive down the 5 parking lot ramps, my son cursed like a sailor, trying out a vast new lexicon of naughtiness, as my daughter held her throbbing and bandaged finger above her head, and I honked at a guy in a Datsun who was driving 1 mile an hour. In a moment like that, all you can hope for is to rise above your limitations. I would have given anything for my mother's steady resolve, her rock-like, "we can handle this" quality. On the day I skinned my knee, my mom just handled it, in the way she always handled everything, in the way that she got baked potatoes and salad and flank steak on the table every night when I was a kid, in the way that I always used to fall asleep to the sound of her adding machine rattling on her table in the kitchen, in the way things were just taken care of. There was food in the fridge, there was gas in the car, doctor's appointments were made, dentist appointments were kept. On her carpool day, she was in the carpool line. No matter what, it was done. I'm terrified that I won't be able to make my children feel absolutely safe and cared for in that way. I am the queen of forgetting things. I can forget an appointment I made 5 minutes earlier. Activities, deadlines, and birthday parties bob around in my brain, disappearing and then surfacing at random intervals. I make lists and lose them. I keep a calendar and forget to check it. I worry constantly about carpool and whether or not I've forgotten a carload of weeping children at the gate. How on earth does anyone do it? How did she make it look so easy? Or maybe time makes everything seem easy. Or maybe I am really terrified that I'll never become enough like her to keep her with me. I know that we all carry our mothers inside us, but somehow that doesn't seem like enough. It's possible that preserving things just makes us more aware of what we've lost. Maybe the past is supposed to fade, and that's actually a kindness of human memory. So many of my memories from childhood are lifted directly from my mother's home movies that I sometimes wonder at the few that are my own. But some do stay vivid all on their own. When my daughter was a baby, I remember my mom rocking her to sleep one night and singing a familiar song over and over. I didn't remember the song, but I knew it somehow. As I listened to her in the other room, I started singing along. "What is that song?" I asked my mother when the baby was down. "It's just something I used to sing to you." "But what's it called?" She didn't know, so we Googled the lyrics. It turned out to be a song that had topped the charts in the 40s when she herself was a baby. Her mother had sung it to her. Then, when I was born, she and her mother had sung it to me. Then, when my kids came along, she and I sang it to them. Maybe that's the only way mothers can hold on to things, in echoes, through generations. It's not enough, but it will have to do.